And welcome back to 12 Bar Talk. This episode is going to be a little different than the ones I've previously done, largely in that I don't have a guest. I've had a number of podcast listeners reach out to me and say, you know, we haven't heard much from you, and you're a blues scholar, so what do you have to say? While I won't be giving a huge piece of critical commentary today, maybe we'll save that for a later episode, I wanted to take the time to spotlight a blues musician that many people may have heard of but don't know much about, Ma Rainey, also known as the Mother of the Blues. Those of you who have heard of Ma Rainey have likely heard of her because of the recent film rendition of August Wilson's Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. As someone who has studied and written about August Wilson, I, too, learned a lot about Ma Rainey through this play, especially because much of the information we have about her comes from hearsay and legend. And today, I want to give you a little bit of a look into Ma Rainey the person based on the historical information we have, and maybe even just a little bit of the legend. So, let's get started. Compared to historical information written and available about her contemporary and sometimes rival Bessie Smith, information about Ma Rainey is rather scarce and hard to separate from legend. As far as I am aware, there is only one full biography, written by Sandra Lieb, detailing Ma Rainey's life. Many other short biographies have mixed truth with legend and provide us with only semi-accurate information. Given that information, today I'll largely be using Lieb's biography to give you a brief overview of Rainey's life, but I'll drop the link to the biography in the description so that if you're interested, you can go pick it up for yourself and learn more, and I'll also be dropping in information from other scholars here and there. Gertrude Ma Rainey, first known as Gertrude Pridgett, began her performing career as a young teenager. We have a letter from her brother, among other indicators, that she made her musical debut at the age of 14. From that time forward, she consistently performed in tent shows, and as far as historians can tell, she started adding what she called the blues to her repertoire around the year 1902, and Rainey was quick to claim that she coined the term blues. Musicologist John Work Jr. recorded her story of how she first encountered the blues and added it into her act. As he records it, Ma Rainey heard them in 1902 in a small town in Missouri where she was appearing with a show under a tent. She tells of a girl from the town who came to the tent one morning and began to sing about the man who had left her. The song was so strange and poignant that it attracted much attention. Ma Rainey became so interested that she learned the song from the visitor and used it soon afterwards in her act as an encore. The song elicited such a response from the audience that it won a special place in her act. Many times she was asked what kind of song it was, and one day she replied in a moment of inspiration, "It's the blues." That is what Ma Rainey said when she allowed me to interview her in the Douglas Hotel in Nashville where her company was playing. She added that a fire destroyed some newspaper clippings which mention her singing of these strange songs in 1905. She added, however, that after she began to sing the blues, although they were not so named then, she frequently heard similar songs in the course of her travels. Both Lieb and Elijah Wald say with certainty that Rainey was not the first one to come up with the name blues for the genre, with Wald adding, "It is not clear at what point she began calling her songs blues, and there is no evidence that she used the term any earlier than W.C. Handy did." Whether or not the mother of the blues actually coined the term for the genre, she would go on to significantly influence many musicians of her time and come to define what we call classic blues today. Her largest influence was arguably in the sphere of performance on the vaudeville and tent show stages. By age 18, she had been wooed and married to William Pa Rainey, and together they put on a show as Assassinators of the Blues. They successfully performed this act and many others for years before a Paramount scout discovered Rainey and offered her a recording session. Rainey first recorded in 1923, with Bad Luck Blues being her first recording. She recorded exclusively in Chicago, and even though she was recording in a city where blues music thrived, she would be overlooked by important blues promotional figures such as Carl Van Vechten, who would become the person who immortalizes Bessie Smith with his tales and photos of the blues queen. Instead of focusing on fame through recordings, Ma Rainey focused her work on performing. She would tour the TOBA, Theater Owners Booking Agency, circuit, a circuit known by many Black artists as Tough on Black Asses. Despite the difficult schedules lined up through TOBA, Rainey had people lining up around the block to watch her show, and she continually broke attendance records with her act. In between circuit runs, Rainey managed to record 92 songs. Unfortunately, the majority of the records are very poor quality, as Paramount was notorious for its shabby recording equipment and techniques. The low-quality recordings ultimately mask Rainey's voice, obscuring her full power as a songstress. But despite this setback, Paramount was one of the best-selling record companies of the time period, and she saw great success with her music, particularly with the songs Moonshine Blues, Bow Weevil Blues, and CC Rider. Lieb praises these recordings as great contributions to blues that hold their own even against Bessie Smith's covers of the songs. She says, "Usually, whenever Bessie covered another singer's material, she vocally demolished the original performance. But in this case, her excellent recordings do not surpass their models." What makes Rainey's music stand out and hold their own in comparison to Bessie Smith's recorded work can be pinned down in the differences in their styles. Smith had syncopations and melodical variations more familiar to Tin Pan Alley material. Indeed, most of her repertoire is considered non-blues music. On the other hand, Rainey's work was largely a blues repertoire, utilizing jug bands and what may be deemed a more country sound in comparison to Smith's urbanely sophisticated sound. Yet, despite the differences, or maybe because of them, Rainey's records were some of the best-selling race records in the South, whereas Smith's work would thrive in the North. Though she would have the above-mentioned and many other successes in the recording industry before the Great Depression, Rainey would always prefer touring and live performance to the recording studio. Her superiority in live performance was unparalleled by any of her peers. Stephen C. Tracy says that while Bessie may be attributed the better vocal technique, when she sang, Ma's southern-drenched voice, echoing the field hollers and folk songs of 16-hour days among turn rows worked so unrelentingly that the laborers could see them in their dreams, had a depth of feeling matched by few other blues singers of her time. It was Rainey's voice and deep understanding of her audiences that allowed her to elicit their undivided attention. She thrilled audiences during performances simply by her chosen costuming and the way she staged her entry. The song that she used to open her act, Moonshine Blues, needed to be able to accommodate that entry, and we can hear that in the recording. Thomas Dorsey, her pianist and band manager, vividly recalls what it was like to watch her enter as she sang Moonshine Blues and the crowd's reaction to it. He says, Ma Rainey's act came on as a last number or at the end of the show. I shall never forget the excited feeling when the orchestra in the pit struck up her opening theme, music which I had written especially for the show. The curtain rose slowly, and those soft lights on the band as we picked up the introduction to Ma's first song. We looked and felt like a million. Ma was hidden in a big box-like affair built like an old Vitrola of long ago. This stood on the other side of the stage. A girl would come out and put a big record on it. Then the band picked up the Moonshine Blues. Ma would sing a few bars inside the Vitrola. Then she would open the door and step out into the spotlight with her glittering gown that weighed 20 pounds and wearing a necklace of 5, 10, and $20 gold pieces. The house went wild. It was as if the show had started all over again. Ma had the audience in the palm of her hand. Her diamonds flashed like sparks of fire falling from her fingers. The gold piece necklace lay like a golden armor covering her chest. They called her the Lady with the Golden Throat. Rainey and her band would perform hits such as this one night after night and receive numerous curtain calls. Even when she would perform different songs, the result would be the same. It was Rainey's performative nature that kept listeners buying records and coming to see her perform live time and time again. And while some may claim that other performers had just as much the ability to captivate audiences in the way Rainey did, if the people were expecting a Ma Rainey performance, no one else would do. Lieb reports an account of Rainey's band trying to still perform by hiding Ma Rainey's absence when she was detained by the police in Tennessee for a full week. She says, "We still had Ma's trunk full of clothes, and we had another big girl on there, and she was about Ma's size. We decided to open up and put some of Ma's clothes on this girl, and so Ma's act come on, where she stepped out of this big vitrola thing, and this girl, she sang inside the box, but she stepped out of there. Somebody hollered way up in the balcony, 'That ain't none of Ma Rainey, that ain't none of Ma Rainey!' And the show closed right then. They fired us there, and we stayed in the town." And that's Dorsey's account. Truly, it was less the song and more the performer that the audiences were looking for. The same song done by a different singer than Ma Rainey was not what her audiences were looking for. And if we look strictly at the accounts of performance, Rainey's rendition of Moonshine Blues, especially in performance, was by far one of her most successful blues recordings and performances of her career. And just in case you're curious why Ma Rainey would be detained here and there, well, there are a number of reasons that all involve racism, but there are also many legends. Blues singer Karen Lovely prefaces her version of the song Prove It On Me, on her album Prohibition Blues, with this legend. She says, "One of my favorite stories about her sexuality was kind of loose in the 20s. It was a little more free as long as you didn't get caught doing anything. And Ma Rainey kind of swung both ways. Sometimes she swung more one way than the other, but legend has it she was in a wild sex orgy with a whole bunch of women that got raided, and she was only saved by Bessie Smith barreling through the house and sneaking her out the back door." And Lieb asserts that there was plenty of evidence that Rainey was bisexual, as, quote, "Ma Rainey was arrested in 1925 for an indiscretion involving her quarries." And Lieb describes the tangle with the Chicago PD, stating that the police got to the party right as it was getting steamy, and Ma Rainey, the last one out of the place, tripped down the stairs and got caught. Bessie Smith would later bail her out. And so that story runs similarly to the legend Lovely tells on her album and may lend credence to her story. So she would record Prove It On Me Blues 3 years later in 1928, and it's thought that this is one of the few songs that would touch directly on her life's experiences. But despite the fact that her ability to captivate an audience kept her working on the Toba circuit and the tent circuits, long after many other performers could no longer find gigs or make money on their acts, Rainey's popularity would soon succumb to the changing times. The Depression spurred a change in entertainment that was already underway. Recording companies cut back or closed their doors as record sales plummeted. Live theater was replaced by film, and records and vitrolas lost their importance in homes as the radio became a better investment for frequent new entertainment. Gertrude Ma Rainey faded from the public eye by the early 30s, and though she still ran two theaters in the South successfully, her records were all but forgotten, along with her achievements, until the blues revival period of the 1960s. To drive home how forgotten she was, her death certificate listed her occupation as a simple housekeeper. A simple housekeeper, not one of the blues greats. Despite being slighted by such poor historical documentation, Lieb still claims that Rainey was a woman who bridged two time periods. She was, quote, "one of the last great minstrel artists and one of the first professional women blues singers," and left an indelible mark on recorded blues. That synthesis of folk blues melodies, themes, and images, and a style of black minstrelsy and Toby Time vaudeville which was to vanish from live performance by the 30s. It is the memory of Ma Rainey's strong live performances, combined with the legends surrounding her music, that keep her alive in the public imagination as one of the early blues greats. Thanks for joining, and I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. As I said at the beginning of the episode, I will drop the link to Lieb's book in the description of this episode so that if you are interested, you can copy and paste it and go get that book to read for yourself. It is a great one. And If you liked this episode or any of the episodes that I have produced thus far, please take some time, rate us 5 stars, and you can do that on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can even go to our Facebook page and write a review. Anything helps. Share it with a friend. The more people that listen to this, the merrier. And with that said, until next time. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to click the subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts so you always catch the latest episodes. 12 Bar Talk is hosted, recorded, and produced by me, Dr. Chelsea Adams, and supported by Salt City Blues, LLC, a blues dance event company located in Salt Lake City, Utah.